Welcome back. You're watching Stockwatch. Joining me to unpack your stock-related questions this evening are Roy Mutoni from Sanlam Investments and Trikas Komring from Capicroft. Please do send those questions via SMS to 41392, email us at stockwatch@bdtv.co.za or tweet us at BusinessDayTV using the hashtag Stockwatch. Thanks so much for your time, gentlemen. I'm actually not even going to go in terms of how the market performed today. I'm going to go straight to the questions because there are lots of them. There's actually an interesting one here. Many business analysts and the general public are complaining about the presently high interest rates. Presently, the prime rate is at 11.75% versus the prime rate of 15% in 2008. The main contributor towards these complaints are that many citizens are living beyond their means trying to keep up with the Joneses. Everyone is driving a BMW or Merc or Land Rover these days. Beware, the stock market is in for a major correction. I want to start off with you, Roy. From the beating down of SA Inc stocks just last month, do you think that there could be another hit? Do you think that it may not be over or that was overdone and whatever pressure that we could see now may be just shallow and short-lived?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. The thing about SA Inc, the shares had really sold off because of a lot of pessimism around everything, around earnings, around the outlook for GDP, around everything in SA. I mean, we all thought we're going to stage 8, stage 10. And those things are not off the table, but it's quite clear that there's a big effort that's being made to ensure that load shedding isn't as excessive as it is. So if you look at it in rands and cents terms, in actual practicalities, most of the companies were saying between stage 3 to maybe even stage 5, they can make a plan. So if that's where we hang around during this winter and over the third quarter, then maybe earnings are not impacted that badly. But what you saw was ratings, such as the P multiples, had gone down to really low levels. So industrial SA was trading at something like 4 times, 5 times, which is incredibly low relative to history. So what you probably have is some reasonable level of margin of safety in individual stocks. And from here on, maybe what you might have is some earnings coming through, improved confidence, and then you see share prices moving up. The likelihood that we go substantially lower than this, I think, is pretty low. That's one thing. Then the other thing also, without beating up the topic, is there was also the issue around local fund managers taking money overseas, for especially the ones regulated by Reg 28. They're probably somewhere close to their peak. And as far as the Rand went, became a bit unwise to take out more money. So you have this confluence of factors that are basically stabilizing valuations at where they are now. And we can look at individual stocks and see where outlooks are going. So no, I think it's a long-winded way of saying, I think we've probably seen really bad ratings, really low ratings, and in all likelihood, now things just become a little bit more rational.
Well, quite interesting, because I feel like the comment is basically talking about a filtering through of these economic challenges into companies and whether the stock market could see another crash. But you look at Trikas, Standard Bank coming out with its trading update today. And of course, it is talking about these headwinds in the macroeconomic environment, but still saying that, hey, listen, our top line growth is still great. Together with headline earnings per share, there are a few things that they're watching, credit losses in some of the divisions breaching their target, but saying that we're actually still all right. So my thing is that how far then does the economic challenge go into the stock market?
Yeah, so just let's use Standard Bank, which might be, you know, the banks might be more, have more, let's say, micro drivers. Most of the earnings growth over the last 12 to 24 months, well, 18 months maybe, has been due to an increase in interest rate margins. So interest rate margins are quite elevated, and they might stay here for a while, but it's quite elevated. So I wouldn't bank on them increasing over the next 12 months again, like they've done over the last few reporting periods or so. And then secondly, I do think that credit loss ratios will increase over the interim, you know, the next 6 to 12 months. Normally those tighten until well after interest rates have started falling again. So let's say at least for the next 6 to 12 months, you'll see credit loss rates increasing. But even having said that, I do think that the banks are pricing in, a tough environment with regards to those two metrics. And so I'm not standing in anybody's way that's buying banks at this stage, even after Standard Bank's, rally recently. Also Standard Bank, they've got some African, exposure. And I do think that over the medium to longer term, that exposure will bode well for shareholders. But coming back to the comment, I do think a lot of the companies, even though they're priced, a train smash, which doesn't seem to be happening, a lot of them, durable, semi-durables, motor retailers. I'm thinking about a company like ZZD, that has recently posted results, good results, but that's looking back 12 months. Now they've borrowed a lot of money at expensive rates. They've increased their fleet into a economy that looks recessionary. I'm not sure that's the smartest thing to do. So I'll be avoiding those that are generally more interest rate sensitive, which are yet to feel the interest rate pain, and where there's a lot of debt on the balance sheet.
Ah, okay. And quite interesting that you actually bring up Zeta, that's Zeta with an A. There is a question on that, comments on Zeta. So Drik is pretty cautious on that high interest rate environment, also high debt. Roy, I have also heard other analysts actually quite positive on it. What's your take on Zeta at this point?
So I think what the analysts are looking at is it's probably trading at, I don't know, a 2 or 3 times PE multiple and looks incredibly cheap. But I think cheapness is one attribute, and cheapness is not an investment, is not an investment thesis in itself. This is a business that is highly capital intensive. Like Drico said, they've taken on a lot of debt because that's their business model. The whole tourism cycle has improved. And we're probably riding somewhere close to the peak. Maybe it gets a little bit better through this year, but I think we've seen most of the recovery as it stands. So if I was to forecast their top line growth or see where their margins are going, I would say it would go against that thesis. But I guess what the analysts are saying is that it's so cheap that maybe you buy it over the cycle, you'll make a bit of money. I just worry about industrial companies with heavy gearing, even though it is secured.
All right.
Especially at a time when they're not growing top line.
Yeah. You say that cheapness is not a strategy. What about Pick and Pay? Pick and Pay is at an all-time low. Is this value or a slow decline, Drikus?
Now, Pick and Pay, I think, have different structural issues. I think SPAR also has some company-specific issues that they should work on. ShopRite has taken a lot of market share from both of those, as Woolies. I do see them fighting back. They're spending money on central distribution. Pick and Pay, SPAR's investing money into SAP. I think maybe they can SAP, but that might happen. But they've got some issues of their own, both of them. And I do think that especially SPAR is pricing in a lot of the bad news. Also, gearing a bit of an issue, not too bad. It's a grocery retailer, etc. Some other units in there, but I'm not too concerned about them. They're not as interest rate sensitive as a durable retailer or semi-durable retailer. So we own some SPAR. I think maybe Pick and Pay is not a bad buy. Not a fan of management at the moment, but I do think SPAR, they've got some new management on the board, and it looks like they're cleaning house, and they can begin with a clean slate. Maybe they exit Poland, etc. There's some low hanging fruit to pluck there. Yeah. And then eventually, margins have closed down for both of those companies, Pick and Pay and SPAR. Eventually, a lot of the cost, element that's come into the, that's been pushing margins, been squeezing margins. Eventually, if the economy picks up a little, they are going to push that through to consumers. The whole industry is going to do that. Then they'll recover a lot of their lost earnings.
Yeah, pretty interesting that you bring up SPA, because I think I've said on the show before as well that there seems to be a shift in sentiment between Pick n Pay and SPA, where there's a little bit of souring on Pick n Pay, and then you have that optimism picking up for SPA. Of course, once they're through the SAP challenges, I think they're kind of good to go on the South African front, and especially if they exit Poland. Going back to Pick n Pay, Roy, is the souring of sentiment kind of speaking to the structural challenges that maybe will take a while for Pick n Pay to turn around? What is it there?
So Pick n Pay and SPA being shown up by the stellar performance that you've seen in ShopRite. So regardless of how well they do, I mean, ShopRite's eating everybody's lunch, whether it's in delivery, it's in hypermarkets, in all of that. So you have to put that aside. I know I did say cheapness is not an investment strategy in itself, but it's a massive consideration. So you look at SPA. SPA has it foot-faulted at a time when the macro was going against it, and it got really punished for that. And they probably have a few steps to go before they turn around. But the valuation has compensated for a lot of this. As it stands right now, you have to take a bet as to will they, won't they, about Poland? Will they, won't they, finish this SAP thing? Pick n Pay, on the other hand, seems to have a plan. The valuation seems to be quite cheap. It seems to be working out. And when you, in isolation, when you put ShopRite out of the mix, then Pick n Pay just seems to be one where if inflation's coming down, then the retailers start working out, because they go back and squeeze the manufacturers. So there is a place for them. There is a reason why you need to look at this one, because it's cheap. And maybe because they haven't foot-faulted and they have a reasonable balance sheet, it could be one well worth looking at.
Ah, all right. There's a question here on Vodacom. Is Vodacom a buy at this price? Driggers?
Well, I prefer the MTN until, you know, the 40% run-up in the price, at least. I do like the markets better. Nigeria floating exchange rate is great. You know, obviously reported earnings will come down quite a bit. I think it's more than 40% of its EBITDA comes from Nigeria. So a 30% drop in the reporting currency means that, you know, you've got a, 12, 15% drop in, you know, total group EBITDA. But at least most of that is now extractable, convertible back to the group company. You know, so cash flow conversion increases by 40%, even though reported earnings falls 12%, 15% or whatever. So I think that's a good thing. I do think the Naira recovers a bit over the short to medium term after, you know, most of the money gets pooled. So this is a big chance for everybody to pull money out. You know, it's floating again. But once that subsides, I think you do see that a lot of firms decide to stick it out or actually reconsider investing in Nigeria.
Yeah, all right. Well, Driggers, there being more of an MTN person, on your side, Roy, and would you be buying Vodacom at these levels? What do you need to consider there?
So Vodacom, previously people bought it because of the high dividend yield, the SA focus, and the fact that we all thought or believed that it had a premium SA business relative to everybody else. And then Safaricom used to spit all of its earnings into a dividend that made Vodacom become more or less a bond. But now things have changed. It's quite important to recalibrate your investment thesis here. You're investing in Egypt, and Egypt's gone through its Nigeria problems. It also has currency issues and translation there, and they probably overpaid to a certain extent there. Kenya is probably ex-growth. Ethiopia is a whole new ballgame. We don't know how that pans out, but it's going to take a lot of capex before we find out what's happening. And then in SA, MTN has picked up its game. So you can't say that there is one premium player that Vodacom is streets ahead of them. Mm-hmm. So I think Vodacom just feels a little bit expensive. I don't think the market appreciates just what difference there will be with regards to the dividend. And we have to see Egypt settle down. We have to see a thesis emerging for Ethiopia as well. So like Drakos, I think we're used to Nigeria. The Naira is as bad as it's gotten. MTN is executing relatively well, and they're catalysts. So they're going to get rid of a few operations in West Africa. That will bring some cash in. This fintech story, we haven't seen the end of it quite. We haven't quite seen the end of it, and it's cheaper. So at the beginning, I did say cheapness in itself is not a thesis, but I think cheapness can contribute to the thesis.
There's an email here about Sasol, quite an interesting one. Can you please ask your gurus on the show why the Sasol shares follow the Brent crude price? Sasol is worldwide seen as a leader in producing petrol from coal. If the statement is correct, why are these shares then linked to the price of crude oil and not the price of coal? Are we then all these years being fooled by the media that Sasol produces petrol from coal? I've asked this question many times on Stockwatch, but for some reason my question was never tabled. Thank goodness we are tabling it today.
Drikus,
your thoughts?
Great, absolutely great question. Sasol is not an oil company. It's a petrochemical company. It's pivoted more into chemicals away from gasoline products. So, the Secunda operations, which is still the major cash flow producing asset, locally for the group as a whole, produces from coal. And that's one of the reasons that they struggled last year. They had to buy coal at expensive levels on the open market because they didn't produce enough of it from their own operations. Paid a pretty penny for them. You know, coal prices went up to about $400 free on board prices. That's part of the reason why they struggled last year, while a lot of other oil majors, made a lot of money. That's part of the problem. So it shouldn't follow the price of Brent oil. If anything, it should rather follow West Texas Intermediate because that's the main input that they get at the Louisiana plants. And most of those plants and those margins follow the WTI prices. And thirdly, one of the biggest components, they're actually more like a refiner. So you have to look at refining margins, and refining margins collapsed in the first half of the year. That's why Sasol's share price was under pressure, despite, periods where the oil price were making proper spikes. Refining margins are also important for them. Refining margins, rand dollar exchange rate, Brent crude oil price, but also the inputs like coal is important.
So is this why then we've seen such a confusion in the Sasol share price? There's been a lot of pressure, as Drika said, even sometimes when the oil price is pretty elevated. I'm just wondering what's your take on what's happening with Sasol and also it being pegged to the oil price, Rory?
So Drika's has 110%. I couldn't say it any better.
Yeah.
The thing that you have to keep in mind as well is because of this perception of the link to oil prices, then whatever news flow comes around oil prices should influence the stock, right? So up until now, the oil price has been coming off. There's always been all of this talk about cutting production globally to try and support prices, and that's not coming through. And then the whole story about global recession, which would impact demand. And then there's the thing about China not picking up on its demand, which is all weighing on the oil price. So that sentiment will flow to Sasol. And we being the marginal buyers, we South Africans being the marginal buyers, and seeing Sasol as our only connection to the global oil price to hedge against our fuel prices and everything, just means that that's where the sentiment lies.
All right. So it's all about sentiment and not necessarily the fundamentals, Rory?
No. Well, there's no actual peg. But if aggregate investors believe that this stock is driven by the oil price, you will see it behaving in that way.
Yeah.
The cleverer one, like Draco's here, would be able to actually rather follow refining margins and see where that trend goes, and they'd be the ones who make money.
Okay. All right. I get you guys. All right. Let's move on to more resource companies. Northam and Impala. I've noticed that Northam and Impala are once again close to price parity, and that over the last few years, going long Impala and short Northam has returned 20% more than a few times. Before I jump in to this trade, I was wondering if, in the panel's view, the fundamentals behind the idea have shifted due to Impala's inevitable acquisition of RB Plats, and if it is no longer a no-brainer. Drikus.
I have no idea why price parity matters in deciding. No idea. Sorry, you've got me there. But yeah, just really because I do think Northam has been better at capital allocators or operators over the extent of the last 10 years. They've actually increased the enterprise value, the shareholder value over, let's say, a 10-year period or so, while Impala and Amplats have also done so, but at a lesser rate. So I do think Northam has got a better operators. I would rather back them than the other two, but we own neither. We own a bit of Zimplats listed in Australia, and we own a bit of Tharisa Mining. We think they are much, much cheaper, and they've got much better resources at the moment than do these. Much better life of mines, etc. Yeah.
Roy, would you be going long or short on either Impala or Northam Platinum? Do you think anything shifted also with the RB Plats acquisition by Impala?
So the thing about it is, Northam had put aside some money to do this acquisition, and now clearly they're not going to, and they have to make a call about the shares that they hold. So from a Northam shareholder's perspective, you're thinking there's a lot of cash that could come our way. Impala, on the other hand, have to go all the way. They have to buy out that whole thing. They have to allocate a whole lot more cash, and they've got the problem that they have to figure out what they do with Northam. So what you probably have here is a little bit of event risk. Northam probably would be cash rich, would be able to pass it on and then go ahead with now start looking for other growth avenues. Whereas Impala, on the other hand, has many questions to answer. So to me, I would say we prefer Northam over Impala as a house, just because I think the investment case is clearer now.
All right. Here's one. I don't know how closely you guys are still watching Steinhoff. Please try to make me understand why the Steinhoff share price is continuing to rise. Today it touched, or I think actually this was yesterday, it touched 35 cents, more than 25% up. I think I saw t at 29 cents today. The Dutch court decision comes out on Wednesday, and I suspect someone is buying. I could be wrong, but what is going on? I mean, Dricus, is there still something for shareholders to get at this point? I think they did reject the restructuring, but now Steinhoff is trying to kind of turn that around with this Dutch law thing that's happening there.
Not following it. Absolute waste of time.
Yeah, no, Roy.
Yeah, no.
Well,
I haven't looked at that. I mean, there was really nothing there. So I've not followed it for a long time. So I really don't understand.
I
Man,
don't.
you need to spend a really a lot of time here to understand what's going on. You need to have a bit of work in a bit of scenario analysis with regards to all the outcomes. And it gets a very, very assumption laden exercise. It's just in the too difficult for me pile, in the dustbin at the back.
Sorry to the viewer, and hopefully I'll actually also forward it so that Simon can maybe tackle it with his panel as well tomorrow. We'll see who still watches Steinhoff and who's actually buying. There's an interesting comment here. A quick shout out to the PIC, who announced less than a month ago that they'd bought approximately 45 million shares in Gold Fields, presumably between 300 and 323. A 2 billion rand loss in 3 weeks is a commendable achievement. And actually, I did actually look at this, and the gold price had been rallying, I think, a month and a half or 2 months before the PIC finally went in. Adrikas, what do you think of the timing that the PIC went into Gold Fields?
And I like to take the opposite side of a PIC trade. So I love them for being in the markets. I love them for providing liquidity. I'm always at the opposite side.
Roy?
Look, the thing is, I guess at the time there was the perception that the gold price was running, the rand was weak, there was great uncertainty, particularly around the stuff in the US. Nobody gets it right all the time, and also they are long-term investors. So let's give them credit for being out there. I mean, like Jacob says, they provide liquidity. They're an asset manager like us. They get it right sometimes, they get it wrong sometimes, but I think the biggest judge of all of us is time.
Yeah, and quite interesting that you talk about them being a long-term investor, because a lot of people, there's this very big narrative that with these gold miners, You just use them for trading opportunities. Let's get to your stock picks for today, gentlemen. Trikus, what will it be?
A stock pick is, well, unfortunately, it's run up 9% now since, you know, I've sent through the stock pick this afternoon. It's called, I'm not going to even bother with pronouncing the Spanish name, but it's listed in New York. It's an Argentinian company. It owns about 400,000 hectares throughout the South Americas, mostly in Argentina, but they've got some Uruguay, Paraguay, Brazil holdings as well. They also own a lot of properties in Buenos Aires and a bit elsewhere. So it's a play on both on Argentina, which I think there's a lot of there's a big prospect for political reform again, you know, like in the mid 2000s, but this time it does seem more concrete. And secondly, it's a play on agriculture. Do you think that the Ukrainian-Russian grain deal is dead in the water? Excuse the pun. And the company is sitting at a 4x EV EBITDA for basically holding agricultural assets that are valued at about half what the North American counterparts are valued at.
All right. On your side, Roy, what will it be?
Nice and simple. I'm going for Absa. Absa is the one bank that hasn't rallied recently. They've got a big African presence. There's a big concern about Ghana and Kenya, which I think have broadly been resolved, but the share price hasn't quite reacted to that. Looking at both Nedbank and Standard Bank's results, particularly Standard Bank having strong operations in Africa, and the fact that for all of these, top line is growing and costs are getting worse, whereas Absa has gone through its restructuring, it's managing its costs better than anybody else. I think that's the one that has a little bit of wind under their sails and a small underpin.
All right. Well, thank you very much for your time and for your analysis today, gentlemen. Appreciate it. That's all for Stockwatch this evening. Thanks to our guests, Roy Motooni from Sanlam Investments and Trikus Comring from Capicroft. Up next, the close with Bloomberg. Stay watching.